The Stop and Think News podcast begins now.
Everybody, Joe from Stop and Think News here. Been an interesting news day, to say the least. We've seen quite a few things happen. One of the things that has happened involves Letitia James. I will play a video. It's about 18 minutes long. I don't know that we need to watch all of it, but let me go ahead and get that set up for you. But basically, so everybody knows this. She's a vile, awful human being. She definitely doesn't care about law and order, like, you know, like the left wants you to believe she does. We saw what happened with Trump's bond. Just ridiculous stuff. Let me go ahead and get this up on the screen for you really quick. It's a video from Barry Cunningham. Let me get it shrunk down just a smidge there. There we go. And it's, like I said, it's about 18 minutes long. I don't know that we'll need, and former President I don't know Trump's that we'll need to watch all of it.
Just ruled on a new challenge from New York Attorney General Letitia James. She wanted to have Trump's $175 million bond rejected, but the court says his bond will stand. Here's what the former president had to say ahead of that ruling this morning.
We have another trial going on right now. That's Letitia James. She campaigned on the fact that I will get Trump. I'm going to get Trump. And it has to do with a bond of $175 million. She doesn't want me to participate with financial companies in New York. So we have a company, I guess, based in California. I put up $175 million in cash, and she's questioning the bonding company.
Hi there, Emily. There have been many appearances and hearings before Judge Arthur Engoron during the course of this civil fraud trial. Many of them have been contentious, but this one stands out because the parties were surprisingly collaborative. The hearing lasted for about an hour, and during that time, the lawyers for Trump and the state attorney general's office came to an agreement about the bond. Now, questions had swirled around the company underwriting the bond. That's Knight Specialty Insurance Company. It always maintained that Trump posted cash as collateral to secure the bond. But the attorney general raised questions about how that account was managed and who had access to it and whether Knight Specialty could pay the bond if needed. So to address those concerns, here's what both sides agreed. The cash that Trump put up as collateral will remain as cash in a Charles Schwab account. Knight Insurance will have exclusive control of that account. No one will trade or withdraw the money. Knight Insurance and Trump will provide monthly statements to the attorney general's office and the court proving that the balance remains $175 million.
Letitia James got the big smackdown this morning. Big Letty found out that her attack on Trump's bond isn't gonna work. The court ruled that the bond is valid and sufficient. And why not? It's backed in cash. Let me give you a little insight here because I think it's really important. As you may know, the original bond amount was for $454 million plus interest to match the judgment that the judge threw on him. Trump then appealed, and the appellate court dropped the bond limit to $175 million. But here's why it's really important. Letitia James, Big Letty, tried to make the bond so high that it would be almost impossible for Trump to appeal the $454 million verdict. That was obviously a clear violation of his due process rights. And fortunately, the appellate court stepped in and realized it and dropped the bond to $175 million. They did not vacate the $454 million judgment, but now he can move forward with the appeal. And then he posted the $175 million bond, but Big Letty got cute And what she did was basically bar any New York firm from doing business with Donald Trump, basically and effectively taking him away from Wall Street. She tried to make it nearly impossible for Donald Trump to get a bond so that she could then go crazy and seize his assets. But as Donald Trump is known to do, he found a bond company out in California that would post a $175 million bond. Oh, but Big Letty didn't want to hear that. She tried to invalidate the bond. She needed the company to give her all kinds of information to prove that they were actually, you know, a competent bond company and that they had the merit to show $175 million. Well, they did. And today, the court ruled that the bond is valid and sufficient.
A trial on the $175 million, that's Letitia James. It's all coming out of the White House, by the way. And that's in front of Judge Engoron. And the judge really didn't know anything. He didn't know about collateral security. He said, supposing it goes down. Well, it doesn't go down because it's cash. I put up $175 million in cash, and we have a bonding company do it. And he challenged the bonding company that maybe the bonding company was no good. Well, they're good, and they also have $175 million of collateral, my collateral. But the judge didn't know anything about it. He didn't know what the $175 million cash meant. He had no idea what anything meant, and he had no idea what he did in the trial. And he charged me hundreds of millions of dollars on something where I'm totally innocent. But if you look at what happened today, Judge Engoron should not have done that trial. Should have gone to the business division where they have complex business trials. But actually, it should have never been brought because I didn't overestimate. You know, they say I overestimate. If you look at the numbers, they're underestimated. I underestimated. I did the opposite of what they said. And the reason that they tried to, and they did it for their own narrative, they valued a $1 billion asset at $18 million. They valued other assets in as little, so in order to build their narrative. They want to build a narrative. But if you look, and I have a complete record of what happened, Judge Ann Gordon had no idea what was going on, didn't understand the most simple concepts. And this is the man that took a case, and this is why businesses are they're moving out of New York, because they can't be subject to this. They'd be put out of business. They're moving out of New York because of it. But Judge Engoron had absolutely no idea what had happened. He didn't realize we put up 175. When he found out we put it up, he said, what happens if it goes up or down? I said, it doesn't. Or they said, it doesn't go up or down. It's cash that we put up, all cash. Very few people could do that. And the deal was approved with the Attorney General, if you can believe that. But the deal was approved. She just tried to embarrass everybody, and she tried to embarrass a very good bonding company by saying they weren't creditworthy. Well, they were creditworthy, and what was more important is they had a security, $175 million that I put up. But the point here is that the judge had no idea what was happening. And this is the same judge that 2 months ago made a ruling that shook the world. It shook the world because everyone knows going to that trial, I did nothing wrong. And over here, I did nothing wrong also. This is a Biden witch hunt to keep me off the campaign trail.
Why is that important? Well, today could spell the end of Big Letty's case against Donald Trump. Why? Because now he can appeal it and go through the entire appellate process all the way to the Supreme Court if he has to. His entire legal team now doesn't have to worry about Big Letty or Judge Engoron. They can focus specifically on constitutional merits to have this entire case thrown out.
Now, that's actually important because what she tried to do there with the bond and the bond company was complete asinine bullshit. She was looking for any reason to prevent the appeal because she knows on appeal she'll lose. I mean, if there's any justice left in New York or even in this country, let's be honest, she'll lose. So that's the only reason why she was attempting to prevent this bond from going through If you recall, she needed the bond. They required Trump to come up with this bond. It was an outrageous amount that nobody would have ever covered. And they knew that when they gave him that large bond. But what happened is they lowered it to something more fair. And this is just to appeal. This isn't a bond like you're getting out of prison or out of jail or whatever. This is a bond just to appeal a bullshit ruling from a bullshit jury in bullshit New York full of liberals. So that's what happened. And it was ridiculous. So let me play a little bit more of this video for you. By the way, like I said, this is Barry Cunningham. He's on YouTube. I watch him here and there. He does some good coverage, in-depth coverage and so on with certain things, mostly all involving Trump. I do want to play another clip from another show that I was listening to while driving today. It happened to autoplay. I think you might want to hear as well. So let me go ahead and finish playing a little bit more of this.
I believe they call that checkmate in chess. Here's one of Trump's attorney, Alina Haba, responding to the big win today.
I just left where a judge asked us whether our cash bond, cash sitting in. Ms. James wanted to argue and say that our cash somehow isn't green enough.
He didn't understand that it was backed by cash. $175 million in cash was what backed the surety bond that this company put up.
He wasted time. The judge made a comment saying he thought that money market accounts could go down under the amount. He doesn't even understand basic principles of finance.
So he thought it was like a stock. He didn't know. He thought it could go up and down based on the market. He didn't realize it was backed by $175 million of actual greenbacks, actual cash. It's not going to fluctuate.
But this was the man that decided that we owed money and my client committed fraud. We are going to attack every single one. 1 hour, the attorney general and that judge realized quickly that they had no idea what they were talking about.
Way over their head.
Came to an agreement that everything would be the same. We would modify terms, and that was it. This is where your taxpayer dollars are going, America. Right here. Witch hunt after witch hunt. This is a joke. It's an affront to the American Constitution. It's an affront to our judicial system, and it's an affront to every lawyer that cares about their license, that cares about what is right and wrong. I am sick of coming in front of the press and saying this, but you have to, because you people need to understand what is going on. And now our taxpayer dollars, my time, our attorney's fees, are all here because they're afraid of 2024. And you know what? They should be, because the American people are not stupid. They see what's going on. Thank you.
I love her.
I'm going to leave that off there. And the reason I'm going to leave that off there is for this other video. Let me get that other video booted up.
100% right. Now, what's really interesting.
This video started, like I said, it started autoplaying. It was from that channel Redacted. I think I've actually played things from them before. But I feel like you might want to hear this. I feel like that might be something you would want to do. The simple reason is because they had on what the heck is his name? Now what? It's not going to be in my history, right? Here we go. They had on what the heck is his name? Mac General. Here, let me just play it. You'll see
flowers out there and at least getting out of the snow. Although I did see, like, in Colorado this week,
yes, snow still baseball happening season in the mountains.
Yeah. So
are going to continue to foot this bill because Kathy Hochul.
Let me skip forward a little bit here. They had on the guy seemed to be pro-Trump for a long time. And in this, not so much.
Russian President Vladimir Putin was rushed to the Kremlin late last night for an emergency meeting of some kind, according to our next guest. So did that emergency meeting have anything to do with this? Reports this morning circling that Russian forces are aware of the 101st Airborne Division.
Sorry, I didn't have the
from the United States side.
Up.
And French troops now openly operating in Odessa. This is a separate report. That U.S. Congress effectively declaring war on Saturday night with their big vote in the House of Representatives. So we got a couple of pieces that we want to bring in Colonel Douglas McGregor to get his analysis on. Colonel, your reporting on this is that, first of all, on the Putin piece, you can confirm that he was rushed to the Kremlin late last night. Can you tell us more about that? And then we'll talk about the troops piece.
Most of you are familiar with
him. No, I wish that I could. I mean, I've been able to confirm through multiple sources that he was rushed to the Kremlin in the middle of the night or early in the morning last night. Why, I have no idea. It was linked, obviously, to this report of U.S. and French troops in Odessa. However, Russians on the ground in Odessa have reported categorically that they have not seen any French or U.S. troops in the city or outside of the city.
Now, if this is 101st Airborne Division, we know the best of the best. Would you see them walking down the street? Or would they be invisible, and that's why this report is credible? I mean, on the troops side. We don't know, and maybe we're conflating the two things. We don't know if they're related at all, right?
Well, the French forces are, you know, whatever they are, they're probably foreign legion. They may have some mobile armored elements, but they are largely infantry. The same thing would be true for the 101st Air Mobile. We call it the Airborne Division because of World War II, but it's really a helicopter-borne infantry. They haven't left Romania, as far as we can tell. So, you know, I think that report is false. Now, does that mean that they're not going to do so, or it's not under consideration? We have Biden's promise that there will be no U.S. boots on the ground in Ukraine. But we know we've had lots of U.S. military and intelligence personnel on the ground. They simply haven't been organized into units. If we were to do this, and the French were to do so with us, we would end up at war with Russia. So it's an absurdly ridiculous idea. And one wonders what they're trying to accomplish by going into the port city of Odessa. You know, the port's easily blocked, easily mined from the sea approach. And then you're sitting ostensibly on Russia's doorstep. It can move forward and position all of its rocket artillery and tube artillery to utterly pulverize and flatten any of the areas where we might decide to establish ourselves. It's a very dumb idea, Clayton. It's incomprehensible to me that anybody would be that stupid, but I've been wrong a lot lately on that topic.
I guess a lot of your analysis in the world doesn't account for stupid. Maybe we need to have a stupid index to look at this. You know, going through Russian media, I can't find any information at all about Putin having been rushed to the Kremlin. So this is interesting. The Russian, you know, if this was some sort of emergency on the Russian side, that you might see it all over Russian media. It seems like it's been very, very quiet. So something seems to be happening here. We don't know, as you said, what's going on here to speculate. But do you think that this is tied in any way to this massive new tranche of money, which was passed on Saturday night by the House of Representatives, which, by the way, one of the most disgusting things I think I've ever seen, to see that the
answer that he gives here is important because he explains where this money actually goes. Your media doesn't tell you this. They never will. But it's important that you know, because it's your money that they're sending all over, or allegedly sending all over. Take a listen to where exactly the money actually goes.
The House of Representatives, after they passed this massive multi-billion-dollar funding package for Ukraine, grab Ukrainian flags and wave them cheering for Ukraine.
Absolutely
on the floor of the
disgusting.
House of Representatives. I was really
bothered by that.
You
never see them do this
personally,
with American flags.
Not to editorialize, but I really was bothered by that. While, you know, southern border is wide open, tent cities across the United States, crime rampant, and we're celebrating funding Ukraine. Anyway, do you think that this emergency meeting at the Kremlin has anything to do with this massive tranche of money flowing in?
No, I don't think so, because the Russians have learned how our system works. And this money, most of it is a gift to donors and people inside the United States who have an interest in defense. Now, what do I mean by that? Most of the money will never reach Ukraine. It will be used to replenish existing stocks that have now been emptied into Ukrainian hands. It will pay for things that have yet to be produced by assembly lines. So I don't think the Russians are particularly worried about that. I think that this is another demonstration of the loyalty and fealty of many, many members, to most members, frankly, to their donors. They're waving whatever flag the donor tells them to. And, you know, keep in mind, most of these people on the Hill, they don't know anything about Russia. They know nothing about Ukraine or Eastern Europe. These are all domestic politicians that'll do whatever they think it takes to get reelected. There were only 21 members of the House that voted against the massive funding bill for both, over $90 billion for both Ukraine, Israel, and obviously Taiwan. And they did so because they said, until we've closed our borders and addressed our national security needs and restored the rule of law here at home, we're not sending any more money overseas. And of course, that makes infinite sense. But there were only 21. So I think if you can turn to your
only 21, staff, only 21 that back one, that didn't
and
back this.
Put them to work to find out who's paying each of these individuals that voted for the bill. What, you know, I'm sure they have all been richly rewarded for their support.
That's yeah. Absolutely.
I remember just a few years ago when President Obama was in power, that Senator Tom Cotton crafted a letter arguing essentially for war with Ukraine, or excuse me, war with Iran. In other words, it was one of these letters that said we need to be more hostile and aggressive towards Iran. Sanctions aren't enough. We need to directly attack them and so forth. He ended up receiving, the day after he circulated that letter, had it signed and brought it to the White House, he ended up receiving $1 million from Bill Kristol's Israeli fund. So I think it's pretty obvious how this works. You say the right things, vote for the right way, and you're going to be wealthy.
And that's why they end up with more money good. When they
so
leave.
I think we have a Congress that sort of lives on the Washington version of Epstein Island. It's fantasy world. And they're no longer connected seriously to the people that they were elected to represent. Because I doubt seriously that if you polled the American people, that anybody is rushing to volunteer to fight in Ukraine or the Middle East. I don't see it. And the notion of fighting on Taiwan, that's absurd.
I'll ask our audience who are watching us, you know, tonight here on the show, do you guys think it's appropriate for Americans to go fight in Ukraine and die in Ukraine, go fight in Israel, die in Israel, go fight in Taiwan and die in Taiwan, or by the way, just to even fund those particular wars? I mean, the polling shows, Colonel, over 70% of Americans say absolutely not. So you have a Congress that is absolutely out of touch with the United, you know, the American people on
They're
purpose,
not out of touch. They get money purpose. For doing what
this
they said.
This is not something that they're doing blindly. But as the Financial
it's not
Times
that they're
reports
out of touch.
Today,
it's that they
Ukrainians
want money.
Believe $61 billion in U.S. aid won't stop Russia. They know it's not going to stop anything. This is the front page of the Financial Times. So then, as you point out, where's this money going to go? It's going to go to funnel to military-industrial complex. It's going to be stolen, as William Burns, the head of the CIA, warned Zelensky back in January, stop stealing our money. So we know that this is just flushing this money down the toilets. But yes, we see, Colonel, all of these trenches being built. And all of these, like, brand new, it's only they like went to Home Depot, got all sorts of nice fencing, all new, you know, garden posts and plywood, and they're building all of these massive trenches now, and fortifications. So is that what we're looking at? We're looking at a return to, like, World War One trench warfare for the next couple of years with all this money?
Well, I'm sure that that's what the Ukrainian government, the current one under Zelensky, wants. But there are a couple of problems. First of all, digging trenches is very easy. They have entrenching machines. They're really quite marvelous. And I'm sure if we resurrected the armies of the First World War and showed them these machines, they would be absolutely astounded because, you know, we used to have to dig those ourselves. So these machines are able to cross fields in the space of 30 minutes and dig trenches that will accommodate whatever equipment you want to put in them or whatever soldiers you want to put in them. They can rapidly be reinforced by pouring concrete. So this is easy to do. The problem is, who are the Ukrainian soldiers that will fill these trenches?
Exactly.
Or is there an expectation that NATO troops will come and fill these trenches? I don't see the Ukrainian soldiers doing it. I mean, last week, the Azov, one of the Azov units, this was a battalion strength organization. Probably at one time it was brigade strength, much larger, but it probably had 2,000 people plus in it, a reinforced battalion, and they were the so-called neo-Nazi fanatics that were devoted to the regime. The unit refused to fight. Simply said, we're not attacking. We won't do it. We're not prepared to all die in another pointless attack. In other cases, vast numbers of Ukrainian troops have simply said, that's it, we're going to surrender. And the Russians have been broadcasting very effective surrender appeals. And they know from having talked to their comrades that have come back from Russia that were captured years ago, that they were well treated. So they know that the Russians will not abuse them. They will be processed. They will be fed. If they're injured, they will receive medical treatment. And then they will be escorted to a containment facility by the people that captured them. The Russians have handled this extremely well. You know, all these lies about Russian atrocities may have impressed people in the West, but there's never been the evidence for it on the battlefield. And the Ukrainians know that. So I think this war is very definitely at the end. So unless we have a ghost army that's going to be resurrected from the death sentence that they received from Zelensky, I don't see anybody filling those trenches. Now, again, going back to the NATO bit, we have said, and the Germans have said, that we will not send our forces. Now, we've heard Biden say that he wouldn't do a lot of things and then turn around, backtrack, and do them anyway. So it's not impossible that, you know, we could still be that foolish and stupid as to send troops in there. I wouldn't exclude that. But right now, it's basically the Lithuanians, the Poles, the Romanians, I think the French and potentially the British. But again, what do they propose to do if they actually go there? There are 72,000 troops in the British Army. There are 120,000 troops in the French Army. If we sent all of them, they wouldn't make a dent in the Russian forces that are deployed right now in Ukraine that number over 800,000. There's no chance for these forces to have any impact at all. But they could start a major war. And again, this puts us back on track for two major wars that could escalate to the nuclear level, one in Eastern Europe and one in the Middle East. Take your pick. Any sane administration would be interested in de-escalating and disengaging as much as possible from that potential. But we haven't seen it.
Yet the Wall Street Journal out with a front page story over the weekend saying the Biden administration has been scrambling. In fact, running, I think was the word they used, running behind the scenes to really calm tensions in the Middle East and really trying to talk the Israelis down from attacking Iran and trying to tamp down the pressure there. Those were the words that were used in the Wall Street Journal. The Biden administration is going out of its way, running to stop the Israelis from going to war with Iran.
Well, I don't doubt that there's a certain amount of panic in the White House behind the scenes.
I would like to point out that it was Israel who attacked Iran first. And it was a blip in the news that they did so. You know, the media was like, oh, you know, they attacked Iran, killed some people, I think even some innocent people. Fast forward about a week later, maybe, that's when you see all this footage that all these brainwashed sheep keep sharing of drones over top getting shot down by missiles. That's Israel retaliating for the attack, or Iran, rather, retaliating for the attack. And then Israel attacked Iran again. And it's like I said on Facebook, if you're sitting on your front porch with your family or friends or both, and somebody runs up into your yard and starts throwing rocks at you and hitting you in the head with rocks, and, you know, they attack you first, if you're not liberal or not in a small country in the middle of the Middle East that keeps trying to expand its borders over and over at the expense of everyone around you, you would retaliate, right? So you're Iran, you're sitting at the table with your friends, and Israel attacks you. It's that simple. You retaliate. But then Israel retaliates back, and who gets the funding? And I don't think any of these people should be getting the funding. Don't misunderstand what I'm saying. Israel, always. Unless Obama's president, then it was Iran, right? And Israel. But this is my point. Israel initiated this attack, and Iran's demonized for retaliating, which is ridiculous, if you ask me. It seems ridiculous to me. I that's just me. Maybe you have a different feeling about it, and that's fine.
Because they're not in control. They've surrendered control to Netanyahu in the Middle East. And NATO is essentially a battleship with no one on the bridge and engines that don't power the ship anymore. It's adrift. So on one hand, the NATO alliance is really adrift. I mean, can you imagine stupid comments like the ones coming out of Macron happening under previous presidents? No French president would have committed himself or his nation to fight somewhere as part of the NATO alliance without clearing that through Washington. We're not in control. Biden is not in control. I don't know who's making the decisions behind his back. He's simply being handed things to read. But the point is, in the Middle East, Mr. Netanyahu remains in control.
I will tell you who's in control. It's Obama and this other guy that James O'Keefe, one of James O'Keefe's reporters, exposed. You may or may not have seen that. If you're in my Telegram chat, you saw it. If you follow me on Facebook, it's iffy. If you saw it, I don't keep my profile public. It's not Stop and Think News. It's just me, Joe. But, Facebook censors, it lowers what people see of me, especially when it comes to news. Now, if I share a photo or a video of my cat or dog, everybody sees it. But beyond that, no.
Oh, and he's got a real problem. You know, Gaza is a catastrophe. It's failed miserably. They have not won in Gaza. We know that. He wants to go back in and finish up in Rafah. How many men, women, and children that have nothing to do with Hamas will die in that enterprise? It's anybody's guess. And Iran, I think, has demonstrated that if it's attacked by Israel, it has the capacity with pinpoint accuracy to eliminate most of what Israel considers important to its strategic power. So Mr. Netanyahu is in a difficult position. We can't help him. All we can do is tell him to back down. He can't back down. Netanyahu has to escalate or he's finished. So I don't think we've seen the last of the Israeli-Iranian confrontation. I don't think we've seen the last of Rafah. I don't think we've even seen the beginnings of what could happen in the region, because if anything, we're seeing more and more and more solidarity across national lines inside the Muslim world. The Turks, thanks to the last election, signaled their complete disgust with Mr. Erdogan's failure to engage seriously against Israel on behalf of the Palestinians. I think that Mr. Sisi or General Sisi is worried about his future. And I know that King Abdullah right now is on very shaky ground because he was foolish enough to cast his lot with us and help to defend Israeli airspace. Incomprehensible to millions of his own subjects who are watching their brothers on the other side be murdered. So the world has turned against Israel. We are increasingly isolated, but we have very little control. We are now, unfortunately, like the man that borrowed very heavily from the bank and at some point borrows so much that he owns the bank. Mr. Netanyahu owns us. What do we do?
As for a long time.
It's a great question. I mean, I'll get you out of here on this, Colonel. When you look at what the United States is about to do as we head into this election year, it seems like there's a uniparty, of course, that you've been talking about. We've been covering on this.
I want you to listen very closely to this. And, I know we say the left gets triggered. So does the right. And you're not going to like what you're about to hear at all. But it needs to be heard, because I feel like it might be there, not that it might be, that there is truth that you need to hear in this. So I'm going to play this, and I ask all that you do is listen.
This show, they're in solidarity in the United States Congress, and they're passing billions of dollars in packages. They're not securing the southern border. You have a Speaker of the House, a Republican, it seems by name, who has repeatedly said border, 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 and then completely abandoned the U.S. southern border. So it seems like they are in solidarity with this movement and the support of Netanyahu and in Ukraine. What do you think that Putin is going to do here in the next? You talked about shoring up the ground once the ground becomes solid, lack of snow, rain. What do you think is going to happen in these next few weeks in Ukraine?
I think that the Russian forces will advance at numerous points along the line up to the Dnieper River. They will make a decision then where they want to cross, but I still am firmly convinced that after Kharkov falls into Russian hands, which is going to happen very soon, I think, they will then cross the river and turn south and take Odessa. and there is nothing the Ukrainians can do to stop them. They simply don't have the forces. And they have numerous opportunities to cross that river whenever they like. They've left most of the bridges intact. This was always their plan because they wanted to get to Odessa. Odessa is historically a Russian city. So we'll see. A Russian this morning contacted me through another friend and said that he sees no French or American troops in Odessa. I sincerely hope that that condition does not change. If it does, then I think the Russians will accelerate all of their movements and we will find ourselves at war with Russia. Unnecessarily. For what particular purpose? And again, no one expresses any interest in what's happened to the Ukrainian people. Ukrainians are exhausted. They're tired of this war. They've lost, now we think, 600,000 dead. And another million or two wounded. Millions have left. The country is destroyed. It desperately needs peace. We should be thinking of that at this point, not of somehow or another, quote unquote, getting back at Mr. Putin, who's won. Remember, we can't let him win. Right. We've never had any option other than to accept his victory because, again, as we said from the very beginning, Ukraine had no more chance against Russia than Mexico would have against us in the United States. And right now, Odessa is analogous to Tijuana, just over the border from the United States. And you would think that the Russians would concentrate 20 or 30,000 troops there in a bid to threaten us? Of course not. It's absurd. It's nonsensical. We are being foolish and stupid on stilts.
I said I was going to get you out of here a second ago, but I have one more question as it relates to Donald Trump. Of course, you used to work for President Trump.
You need to listen to this. Here it comes.
And I was just kind of stunned over the weekend. I thought that, you know, you mentioned 21 Republicans voted against this spending bill to Ukraine. Massive, massive amounts of money. And 21 Republicans said, no, we need to shore up our southern border. We can't do this. President Trump, he's not president, but he could have, as the leader of the Republican Party, come out and said, end this. No more money to Ukraine. This is ridiculous. And as Lindsey Graham said on Sunday's show, this bill would not have passed the House of Representatives with MAGA Mike Johnson had Donald Trump not been supportive of it.
This idea, give up on Ukraine, makes the world safer. If you pull the plug on Ukraine because you don't have enough capability, there goes Taiwan. The Ukrainians are fighting like tigers. This aid package has a loan component to it. This would not have...
There goes Taiwan. Explain how Ukraine affects Taiwan. It doesn't. You see how disingenuous these people are? And this isn't even the part I want you to hear, but this right here shows you exactly how fake these rhinos are.
Not a pass without Donald Trump. I want to thank the House Speaker and Akeem Jeffries working together in a bipartisan fashion to give weapons to Ukraine to fight a fight that matters to us. And President Trump has created a loan component to this package that gives us leverage down the road.
What is your assessment? You used to work for President Trump. Could he have, did he fail on this or was this a great success? I mean, where would you have advised him to come down on this funding for Ukraine and Israel?
Well, if I were working for him right now and he were president, I would have advised him under no circumstances to support the bill and instead focus our attention on the borders of the United States, restoring the rule of law. And if he went ahead and did what he did, which is essentially align himself with the money pigs in Washington, who are interested in everything other than the American people, I would have to resign. But I think Mr. Wow. Trump wants desperately to be president. And I think he sees becoming president as a vindication, since he truly believes that he won the last election. And to be quite frank with you, I tend to agree with him. That was not a fair and free election by any stretch of the imagination.
Correct.
And we're not about to have one anytime soon.
Nope.
Because all of the same problems that existed back in 2020 still persist today. But I think he wants to be president. And so he is turning to everyone and anyone who has money willing to support him and will promise to do so, whatever they're asking. This is outrageous. I think it's terrible. I think he's made a bad mistake. And I agree with you. He should have stood with the 21 members, because quite frankly, most of America stands with those 21 members. Now, there were 37 members on the Democrat side who refused to support Israel and the money for Israel. That's another issue. And of course, it's toxic for all of the candidates. None of them want to be in the corner with the party that says Israel should stop killing people in Gaza. Anyone who suggests that is immediately branded as an enemy of Israel.
Right.
So it's a very, it's a tough time to run for election. But the good news is Americans can look at what's happening right now and they can find out who's really who.
Right.
You know, who is this man, Donald Trump? What did he do? He encouraged Speaker Johnson to do what he did. He congratulates him on doing a good job. This is catastrophically stupid. He's essentially throwing his principles overboard and his supporters under the bus.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how else to read it. I mean, if you, and our viewers right now, if any of you watching right now are just, you know, dyed in the wool Trump supporters, and no matter what presents itself, it doesn't matter to you. But this was a big, I mean, to me, this rises to the level of coming out and supporting all the COVID vaccines that he did a few weeks ago and praising that. I think there was a lot of MAGA Republicans who said, wait a second, did Trump just praise COVID vaccine? Wait, did I hear that right? And now this weekend, supporting Speaker Johnson, supporting all of this money to Ukraine and Israel and Taiwan, I just can't wrap my head around it. So I don't know what to make of it, but I was highly disappointed in this. And I think 70% of Americans said they absolutely don't want this. I think you're right. By supporting those 21 Republicans may have been a better, maybe smarter move. It's weird because in the same week, Colonel, he comes out and says we've spent $7 to $9 trillion on boondoggle wars in the Middle East, where we've killed millions of people. And he said, we've got nothing from it. We have blood on our hands. We've got nothing but blood and misery. We should have never supported those wars. And then 4 days later, I just can't wrap my head around it. I don't know.
Remember, this is the same man who went on the campaign trail in 2016. And wherever he went, he heard millions of Americans chanting, build the wall, build the wall, build the wall. And what happened? He went after Obamacare. So we have to be realistic about this whole business. He's let a lot of people down, I think. I think it will come back to haunt him.
We'll have to see. Well, to hear you All say, right. if you were working for him still in the Pentagon, that you would have.
That is pretty much the gist of what I wanted you to hear, and that's really the end of it. This was from Redacted. High alert, Putin rushed to Kremlin for emergency meeting over NATO. Okay, so let's take in what we just heard, okay? You heard the general say that he is pretty much just disappointed in Trump for some decisions that he's made. And I guess my question is, do you agree with what he said? What is going on with Trump, y'all? Like, what is going on? Now, listen to me. I'm not saying, like, oh, my God, we got to vote Biden or RFK. They're both not trustworthy. Is Trump playing some sort of chess game? Later on, after he left the interview, they discussed this on the show, and there was people in comments saying 4D chess, this, that, and the other. At what point do you say, okay, enough with the 4D chess stuff? Many Trump supporters think Trump's still the president and that Biden is an actor, right? And that this is all for show. Okay, so we're not digging ourselves into debt, putting on a show. Like, do you see my point? There's a lot of mental gymnastics going on right now with Trump. He wants to win. He wants to be president. We want him to be president. But why is he, despite everything, why is he Why is he supporting the vaccines, even though there's more than enough evidence that they're not safe? Why is he standing next to Speaker Johnson? You know, a lot of people speculated that he must still be president because never before has somebody running for president stood with the House Speaker almost in like a campaign-like event, or almost as a president who's not really running a campaign, and so on. What is really happening? Do you see what I'm saying? He's landing on the side of things that the majority of us do not, we just don't support it. And he's falling right on, he's right there supporting the things that we don't support, right? Right there with the rhinos and all the bad people. He's supporting all these things. And all the general was saying was, is this all for re-election? And if so, how does he think this is going to help him? Today, another poll came out that said that Biden's 9 points ahead of him. Not sure I believe it. Trump's gained support in Black community, the Latino community, and pretty much virtually every aspect of any voting. Oh, and it's, and let me add, it said amongst real voters. So who the hell are all these other polls with, right? They're not interviewing real voters? Then what does it matter, right? All these polls were Trump's ahead of Biden, every single one, except for maybe five over the past election season. And those quickly changed as well. So it's not like Biden's doing anything better. But we do have Trump making these types of moves in front of people. I don't know, guys. I guess what I'm doing is I'm basically asking your thoughts. So wherever you hear this at, be it, I'm debating on whether to put this on YouTube. I do have a Stop and Think News channel on YouTube, but I haven't posted anything to it because some of you have been following me for a while know for a fact that I had one that was at 15K subscribers and they found every reason to take me down. I've talked about this before. I don't want to go through that again, right? I just don't. But I may start putting my shows back on YouTube. So if you're on YouTube, leave a comment if you see this on my channel. If you're on Rumble, let me know what you think's really going on. Is Trump playing chess? And if so, please elaborate on exactly how supporting funding from a broke country like ours, where we just passed a spending bill and we've already exceeded the spending that we passed, helping Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan. I want you to explain to me exactly how that helps, exactly how that's a good move coming out on the side of that. And if you want to add about the vaccines, that's fine too. And look, I'm not saying I'm not going to show up and vote for Trump. I mean, who's my other options, right? But you can't tell me that it's not a little disappointing as of late with some of the things he's saying and doing. It is. It really is. It really is. And I don't have to support the person for president on every single issue all of the time. But within a month, there's been two things where I'm kind of like, what? Okay. Like I said, I'm still going to show up and vote for him. I don't know quite how I feel though. You know what I mean? Like I got to think about how I feel. You got to think about how you feel. I mean, it's one thing to support somebody for president, and it's another thing to fully blindly support every single thing they do just because whatever you buy into or whatever. You know what I mean? So I would definitely like to hear some feedback from y'all on this. Even if you're in my Telegram and you watch this and you'd rather not comment under the video, go to my Telegram and comment under where I post it. You know, post this podcast. If you hear me on Podbean or any of the other ones, make a comment. Let me know what you think. Because I did find that to be quite eye-opening when he said that. It was, you know, kind of like a punch in the face. Like, yeah, that's right. I don't like to hear it, but he's right. So, yeah. Now, I said I was going to play this, and this will be the last thing because I know the last clip was a little long or whatever, but felt you needed to hear it. This is from O'Keefe Media Group. Jeff Zients, White House Chief of Staff, picks up call from OMG regarding special advisor on tape. Now, you can find the original video. I'm mostly just playing this because it does show a little bit of what the original video said. But it also shows how these people run, which tells me that I think what is said in the original video is true. So let's take a listen to this. This just came out. I don't know when this came out. 6 hours ago. So here, they call the guy in question. So let me go ahead and play it.
From Florida, Mr. Gates.
What happened?
Fielding.
Oh, sorry. I don't know what just happened. Let me go ahead and fix that. But ooh, we got it. And where did it go? See what I'm saying, man? Okay, here we go. Let me play that for you. What is going on? It's taking me to everything. Did they take this video?
By getting Jeff's sign off, you're getting the president's sign off.
Oh, this Jeff guy's powerful.
Yeah. Realistically, they are, people call him like the second most powerful person in Washington.
Let's go ahead and give Jeff the Zients a call. I'm actually going to have my colleague do it from a different phone number. Here we go. Let's call Jeff Zients.
Hello.
Hi, is this Jeff?
It is.
Hey, Jeff, this is... I'm a journalist with O'Keefe Media Group. I want to get your comment on a story we're going to be running with the White House. If you had a few moments, if you don't mind.
What's the story?
He runs the White House.
He runs the White House.
Like, he's responsible for everybody that works there.
Uh-huh.
He, like, helps set the president's agenda.
Uh-huh.
Like, controls what gets said, all that stuff.
Is Jeff more powerful than Harris?
In some ways, yes. In some ways, no.
And is Jeff more powerful than Kamala?
Like, not legally, but...
So, I have a subject in your branch of government, and he's talking about how, quote, you're the most powerful person at the White House compared to the vice president. Are you more powerful than the VP?
I'm not interested in this story. Thank you.
Sir, I'd like your comment on that. The American people would like to know.
Who would you say is the most powerful person at the White House?
Jeff.
Jeff?
Yeah.
Jeff is the most powerful person at the White House.
Other than, like, the president.
So all buck stops, like all roads lead to Jeff.
Jeff and the president, yeah.
I'm sir, no sir, you. Sir.
No comment. Sorry.
Sir, can you answer the question? The American people are interested. Are you, this is a source I'm not going to reveal, are you the more powerful than the vice president?
Why is he so stealth?
This is kind of a role.
Because that gives him more power.
Yeah.
More, like, ability to do things, get things done.
Yeah.
He says this. He says, who's the most powerful? Oh, he hung up. It's White House Chief of Staff.
What an intrepid undercover citizen journalist. What an intrepid person. I know you're listening. I can't say what your name is. But great work. Once again, citizen journalists, American swipers meeting with people in Washington, D.C.
And there you have it. I mean, the guy clearly said this Jeff Zients, or Zients, whatever his name is, White House Chief of Staff, is more powerful than, in some ways, than Kamala Harris. What more needs to be said? Is he working for Obama behind the scenes? Is Obama directly? I mean, we all seen the footage of Obama saying he'd love nothing more than to have power to where he's in somebody's ear and they're the president and he's just telling them what to say, right? So he has his third term, basically. So food for thought. Look into that. The whole video, I do believe, if it's not on YouTube, I think it is. I watched it on Telegram. So it's definitely an O'Keefe Media Group on Telegram. I'm pretty sure it's on YouTube as well. But there you have it. That's the show for today. A lot to take in, so to speak. Some wins in court for Trump. Some food for thought that you maybe didn't like to hear. You know, I sure didn't, but it's true. I don't know what's true, but what he said was... food for thought. That's what I guess what I can say there. So anyway, guys, until next time, look, be safe, be prepared, just don't be a jerk about it, and I will talk to you very, very soon.